Blog Talk Radio.
Give back
we are in our business, we are always looking to say, how can we give this to somebody else? And sometimes our nonprofit can always help us to do that effectively. I want to welcome guest 800 to the chat. Thank you for joining us. Momentarily, we are going to get in the conversation. The number to call to be part of conversation this morning, and as well as to ask questions, is 646-915-8166. You all know that I have a webinar series going on called A New You Without Plastic Surgery or Dieting. And that is, I have two more Fridays in this new episode. And you can go on eventbrite.com and look at that and register, or you can register at my website. You can sign for the webinar series, New You Without Plastic Surgery or Dieting. I am also looking for some volunteers to work my show in the Bridgeport area. I have an opportunity to start another show over there, a TV show, so I'm looking for some crew in that area. So I won't have to travel with my Danbury crew up to Bridgeport. So if you are interested, email me at dynamicgaffney1@gmail.com. So I want to just welcome my honored guest right now. She's been so patient with me, and it's just an honor to have her here. So, Brenda, good morning. Hello, Brenda.
Good morning, Daphne.
All right. Are you hearing me?
I'm hearing you. It is breaking up occasionally, but we'll give it our best shot and see what we can do.
I don't know why it's breaking up, because everything is just
okay. Hello?
All right. Are you hearing me now?
I'm hearing you.
Okay. So good morning. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on here this morning and to just tell the different speakers, trainers, authors, coaches, how we can continuously be in front of an audience, because if we cannot do that, then our business is dying. So I'm thankful for you, Red. So why don't you please take some time and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Okay, you're fading out on me there. I heard listeners, and what is it you would like me to tell the listeners?
I want to introduce yourself to the listeners. Can I hear any better now?
Okay, we'll give this a shot. I'm Brenda Kiefer, as you said, and I have been working over 12 years in the speaking industry. I work with speakers, trainers, and coaches, and consultants and authors, and I help them with all facets of their career. We do many different marketing programs and get them in front of meeting planners, government events, health and wellness, military associations, corporations. We are not a bureau. We are more of a booking agency, and we've been in business, like I said, over 12 years now. I've been in this industry, and we know what works and what doesn't. A lot of it has been through trial and error, and we have developed quite a few marketing programs that help us get our clients' names out there in front of these industries.
Okay, wonderful. Are you hearing me any better now?
Yes, it's coming through a little better.
All right, so we'll see what happened. I just turned the volume up, and I'll see what happened. Well, thank you, Brenda. I was trying to recall yesterday. I can't remember how many years ago I met you. As a matter of fact, I met you when you were working at another place. I'm I'm not going to call the name because they're not sponsoring the radio show. But I will say that I met you when I wrote my first book. I don't remember. You remember how many years ago was that, Brenda?
That would have been probably in 2003 or 2004, I would believe. It was
right.
Conversations was the book. I'm not sure which one of the topics you did.
Yes, Conversation on Success. I'm bringing that up now, although I am not mentioning the name of the company. Brenda is no longer with that company. She has her own company. But because of the relationship that was forged there, although I wouldn't say I would do business with that organization again, that I will continue to do business with you. And I'm sharing that so that people will understand. It doesn't matter where you are. Whether you are in your own business or you are working for someone else, relationships are extremely important.
I agree.
Never work for the wages or the paycheck, but the relationship is very important, especially when you know that. I don't know whether I'm going to be there again, but I want to be able to look people in the eye to make sure everything is good. So I want to applaud you on that, Brenda, and I'm glad that we are still in touch.
I am too, and I totally agree with you. I have been in sales since 1978, and I have always excelled at sales and marketing in any company I worked for, whether it was pump replacement parts, log home building, or the speaking industry. And one thing that I have been told time and time again, my clients do business with me because they like working with me.
And exactly.
I give them that special relationship because I am a people person. I don't get caught up in the yeses and the noes and the he saids and the she saids. I like taking care of my clients. I like meeting new people. And I always tell everyone, if you meet me in person, you will get a hug. I don't care if you are a client. I'm Southern,
right.
I'm Baptist, and I'm country. So you are going
to
get a hug.
That's
so
right.
I send you a big hug across the airwaves.
Thank you. And, it's important because I tell my clients all the time, people do business with people, not with a company.
That is true.
Even when we went into the big operations, we must understand that it's not the company that is looking at our proposal. It's an individual. And that's why it doesn't matter the size of the corporation. We diligently search to find someone that we can forge a relationship with. And that's one of the reasons why we need somebody like Brenda, because when we are looking at the broader spectrum of things, we don't always have the opportunity to forge the relationship ourselves. So with that being said, let's talk about what you have to offer us to keep us in front of the public's eye.
One of the things that we have found is, as with any personalities, everybody prefers to get marketed to in a specific way. You cannot always just send out emails and hope to get someone a booking opportunity. You can't just make the phone calls and you can't just send the mail. So we have found that it is best to do a program where we combine all three. We call it our postcard campaign, and we design and print postcards for the speaker, trainer, coach, consultant, or author. And we send those out, and the way we work the program is we hand select from our database clients that we have already screened and know they book speakers, trainers, and coaches, and know that they have funds to pay for them for these bookings. And what we do in our design program is we design an email, and we send that out the first week of the month to introduce the client. And we follow up with sending a postcard that second week. And then that third week, we pick up the phone and make a phone call. And through each of this, we are telling them what the speaker or trainer can do for them. We're talking about what their areas of expertise are, what their background is. Give some of the testimonials their clients have said about them, and basically trying to make them realize why this person is a good fit for their next event, workshop, or training event. And when we're doing this, we're finding that some people absolutely love getting the emails, and they will respond right back. Some will respond back with the email and say, please call me, and some like getting that postcard in the mail, and when we do the follow-up phone call, it's not a cold call anymore because they've already seen an email. They've already been driven to the website through the email. They've already gotten a postcard with the website and some brief bio on it. And then here we are calling to talk about the person, and we let the meeting planner know. We're a little different than a bureau. A bureau will call and say, we have 1,000 speakers, go to our website and find who you need. We call and say, we have the speaker we think is a good fit for you because we do our legwork and find out about their events ahead of time and know what they look for. So it is a spaced repetition program. We also found that if people tell you, follow up with me in October, we're going to start planning an event then, don't wait till October to call, because chances are when you call in October, they got their funding earlier, they forgot all about talking to you 6 months ago, and so they no longer remember and they've already went to another speaker. You've got to keep in front of them every month. So once we start the program, we do that. We follow up by sending a link to your blog or a post or something. So it's very important in how you market yourself. You just can't make that one phone call or that one email and say, go to my website and let me know if you'd like my services.
And why did you decide that I need to do something entirely different? I can't be a speaker's bureau. I got to be something unique and different. What made you to that stand?
What made me do that is the fact that I have spoken to, being in the industry 13 years, I have spoken to many, many speakers, trainers, and coaches. And one constant complaint that I got was, well, I don't want to just go with another bureau that's going to stick me on a list of 1,000 or 1,500 people, and I might get one event every 2 or 3 years. I need someone that can market me. Even speakers that go and train about how to do marketing do not like to market themselves.
Exactly.
So,
that's us. We all do that. We do
exactly.
Everything else. You know, I had a guest on my show when she called back to say thank you. She said to me, you market and promote everybody else. When are you going to start marketing and promoting yourself? You need to do self. And I think we're all lacking in that aspect of what we do. So let's talk about the people during your introduction. You think said the people you represent. Do you offer opportunity for global platforms or only national platforms?
I do it on national platforms, and we customize each marketing program. For an example, I have one lady who will travel anywhere, so occasionally we may find something in Canada or Singapore or Australia, but most of it is in the United States. However, I have one lady who has young children at home. There are travel issues involved in being gone for long periods of time, so we only market her to places within a two-hour driving area. I have a gentleman who is members with over 200 bureaus, and he does not want me to go market him to individual companies and groups. He has me market him every month to all the bureaus he is a member with. So we send updated information. So we are a very targeted program. We market people based on where they want to be marketed, what types of industries are a good fit for them. We have over 80,000 leads in our database of corporations, associations, health and wellness, educators. direct sales groups. And by having so many people to choose from that we have pre-qualified, we know which ones look for what types of speakers. So we're not mm-hmm. sending out postcards
no.
to people that are not going to have any interest in that speaker or to people that are no longer in business and getting mm-hmm. the majority of the cards back.
I haven't. She sounds like a mom and pop. Is that friendly location where all of us need to be heading? Because all of us are looking to be in front of audience, and as you say, we are all stuck on bureaus, and from the minute we became part of that bureau and got that welcome email back, we haven't heard anything else. So we don't know whether or not we are on their list and if we have been presented in front of this. So thanks, Freda, for what you do.
Okay, some of that faded out, but if I understood everything, not everyone is a good fit for every audience. I have audiences.
Exactly.
Yes, I have audiences. You mentioned mom and pop. I have booked someone for just $500 to the Embroidery Association in Georgia that are just ladies that sit at home and have their embroidery machines, and they run a little mm-hmm. business out of them, but they're still an entrepreneur. They still have overhead. They still have to know how to sell and how to market, even
That's
if they're just sitting in the bedroom sewing on their sewing machine. So we have associations that have members of little groups like that. I have also had associations that have hired our speakers that the independent soap and detergent agency, that is, or I'm sorry, the international soap and detergent, mm-hmm. their members that come to their association events are large mm-hmm. corporations. They're the CEOs of mm-hmm. S.C. Johnson mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Tide and Dove and all of these large soap and detergent companies.
Brenda,
yes.
If you call all those corporations on the show, I have to invite them for promotion. So we're not looking to give them any free publicity here.
Okay, not a problem. So to answer your question, though, there are multitudes. You can have large corporations or small little mom and pop groups.
Yeah, what I had said about mom and pop is that as I listen to you, you sound like the friendly mom and pop school where everyone would want to go. I see one of my friends in the chat room, Miss Patricia. Welcome to the show. The number you can call in is 646-915-8166. And Tom, you have a question that you want to ask, and 800 has been hanging in there. Brenda, you have a large database, so that should be welcoming to everybody to know that they're not just going to be sensitive. Because the interesting thing is that you are marketing that gentleman to places that he's already a part of. And that's a very unique thing to do.
Okay.
I'm
having trouble. You're starting to fade out again. I got the word gentleman.
Okay. I am saying, let me ask people in chat if they are hearing it clearly, because if they are hearing it clearly, that maybe something is wrong with your phone. Maybe they are hearing in the chat room. If you can hear me clearly from the chat room, type in the box, please. If you can hear in the chat, my producer did not come today, so I don't know. I am all by myself. So if anybody's out there, wants to volunteer some time to be my producer, let me know. Pat, can you hear me clearly? Because my guest is not hearing me clearly. Okay. She says, no, she's not. So I am not sure what's wrong with my thing. Is that any better? All right. Are you hearing me now? Type and let me know if you're hearing me. I'm just trying to pick this up on the other. And I will be back. It's not a good thing. I'm not sure. Are you hearing me now? I am telling you, this technology has eye of its own. Brenda, are you here?
Barely. It's getting worse.
Are you here, Brenda? Brenda, are you hearing me?
Barely. Right up.
Okay, Brenda. Brenda, are you hearing me now? Brenda? Hello, can you hear me, Brenda?
Daphne, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
You keep breaking up.
I don't know what else. Everything else is fine here. So it must be something else. Can you hear me now?
I'm wondering if it may be on my end because they are working in phone lines in this area where we're having construction on the road work.
Okay. That's why I heard that thing. So why don't we do this, Brenda? I want you to go ahead and mention all the services that you offer.
We offer services where we do cold calls for someone if they want someone to be like their own personal assistant just to make phone calls for them. We do design work of one sheets and postcards and email campaigns. We also design websites and offer several different packages with a combination of all that. We also do ebooks and convert them to Kindle format and iPad format.
Okay, and you can continue speaking until my other guest calls in. So I want to give people your contact information, Rita.
My contact info?
Yes, please.
Okay, the phone number is 865-465-7290. The email is info@willow.mistpro.com.
All right. And Brenda, I need to speak to you later on today about matter.
Okay. Feel free to give me a call. I'll be here all day.
Right. So I will call, but before you go, I want you to kind of summarize what you want to leave the listeners with. You know, what do they need to have in place when they are coming to do some business with you? What do you want them to remember why they need to do business with you versus the bureaus out there?
Well, I would like to leave them with one very important thing. The website is the most important tool nowadays that a meeting planner looks at. So any speaker that is wanting to have any marketing done needs to make sure that their website is up to date and has their most current information on it. We do website consultations, so we any new members with us, we always go through their website and let them know of anything that what we hear responses from meeting planners, what they're looking for. You can overcompensate and have too much and cost yourself work because the meeting planner cannot find what they're needing. So I would like to just remind everyone to simplify, make sure that your website is understandable and very easy to go through, and keep it very updated, because that makes my job easier, and if you're doing your own marketing, it will make your job easier.
All right. So I thank you, Brenda, and based on what you have said this morning, I strongly feel that this is not the last time that my listeners will be hearing from you, because I think you have a good system there. So I will be calling you later on
to some conversations.
So you have a great day and continue to touch lives and to just add value to meaningful relationships.
That sounds good, and I look forward to hearing back from you, and thank you again for having me on the air today.
You're very welcome, and if you have a little break in between appointments, you could listen to the other guests, because you are going to get some great information about nonprofit for her.
I did read your intro and bio, so I am going to hang on and listen to her. I think that she has some very valuable information to offer.
Yes, and I want you to send me your information, and so I can add it to the website, okay?
Okay, I will. Thank you, Daphne.
All right, thank you, and you have a great day. I'll talk with you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So I want to welcome guest 911 to the show, and I want to welcome my honor guest. I'm sure that this is Dr. Dax. So your last four digits are 0157. Is this Dr. Serena Jackson?
Hello. How are
you? Can you hear me? I am wonderful.
I can hear you, but for some reason it seems like you are breaking up.
Oh, boy. The same thing was happening. Is that any better? Is that any better? I don't know why I'm chopping up. Is it any better?
No, it's not any better. And it was that way when you were talking to your other guest. I could hear her clearly. I could not hear you clearly.
All right. I'm going to unplug my microphone. I know if you're hearing me clearly.
Okay.
Are you hearing me clearly?
I can hear you better.
Are you hearing me? Is that better?
It's a little better, but it's still choppy.
Okay, because I unplugged my microphone, so I don't know what it is then. Is that any better?
No, it's not.
All right. Is it any better now?
I can hear you.
Okay.
But it's not,
we are going to try better. All right. We are going to continue and just hope it improves, because maybe it's an inside thing that we are not able to fix. So,
okay.
Dr. Jackson, why don't you please introduce yourself for your returning guest to the show. You were on the show once or twice before. And people know that they're going to have repeated guests because they have good stuff that they're giving us. So, I'm sorry. Please take some time to introduce yourself to the listeners, Dr. Jackson.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me this morning. I am Dr. Sabrina Jackson. I am the president and CEO of Sabrina Jackson Enterprises, which is a training consulting company out of Detroit, Michigan. And one of the areas that I spend a lot of time on is helping people form nonprofits. So I will do the paperwork and making sure that they have all of their I's dotted and T's crossed to actually obtain the 501c3 status from the federal government. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I have been an executive director of a nonprofit. I have also been a funder of nonprofits. So I bring a unique array of skill sets and experiences mm-hmm. to this particular mm-hmm. topic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much. And as I mentioned at the top of the hour, I told people that I just started my nonprofit. And of course, you all know who I'm working with. It's Dr. Sabrina Jackson. And I've been warned and I've been called to a nonprofit from a long time ago and always dreaded that bulk of paperwork. And I tell you, it's such a blessing to be able to have someone in your network who can help you and who knows what the inside out. So enough for me, from me. I want to remind the callers that they can call at any time with their questions. The number to call is 646-915-8166. 646-915-8166. So I'm going to give you the microphone because you are going to give the step by step by step. When there is a question, I will disturb you respectfully to ask a question. But now you have the microphone, Dr. Jackson.
All righty. That's wonderful. And so I do want to, because I do believe that the listeners can hear me clearly. Hopefully they can. And I just want to repeat that call-in number for questions, which is 646-915-8166. Again, that number is 846-915-8166. And so that is the call-in number. And so just to get started on this quest for people that want to dive into the nonprofit world, the first question that I get most times is, what is the difference between a for-profit and a nonprofit? And what are the benefits of forming a nonprofit? So I just want to start right there to let you know that if you want to start a business where you are going to make all the profit, you want to be the big man on the totem pole, you need to form a for-profit, because as a for-profit business, you are in business to profit, to make money, to make as much money as you possibly can. So that's the thing for a for-profit. A nonprofit, you can make money, but the money that you make in the nonprofit goes back into the organization to serve the population that you plan to work with. So it's important to know that a nonprofit is designed to meet a need, to provide a service for someone or for groups of people who otherwise would not be able to pay for that service. And because you are able to do that, the government will deem you as tax exempt. And as a tax exempt organization, you are doing charitable services, charitable activities, charitable work with a group of people who otherwise, again, would not be able to pay for it. So those particular ideas that you have about doing something in your community to help young people, helping low-income people, helping with job training, helping with the reentry of ex-offenders, helping with domestic violence, helping with tutoring or mentoring, all of those things are services that that person may not be able to pay for on their own. So you would form a nonprofit to meet those particular needs.
I want to ask a question there before you continue. Those people out there who they have those desires and dreams that you just mentioned, but they are probably thinking, I'm not qualified to form a nonprofit. Would you address that a minute? Are there any special qualifications to creating a nonprofit?
That is an excellent question, and thank you so much, Dr. Daphne, for asking it in the way that you did, because I do get that all the time, is that I have this dream, I have this passion, I want to help these people, but I don't have a degree, I don't have the training, I don't have the background. That is the unique thing about a nonprofit. It's because one of the things that nonprofits have to have is a nonprofit board of directors. So you yourself as the founder, the visionary, the person who creates the organization does not have to be a specialist in that area or have that particular skill set necessarily. So there are no special requirements that you have to have to start a nonprofit. However, there are requirements that you have to do in order to get it, and there are things you're going to have to do in order to keep it. So it's important to know that it's not that you can't learn it, because it is teachable, coachable information. You just have to be open to learning a new way of operating and working with the federal government that's going to benefit the population that you're planning to work with. So let me say it again. You can definitely be able to start a nonprofit, because you're going to get resources and help from people who have experience, who have background, to serve on your board, to assist you with walking out that vision.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you. So listen, guys, you can breathe a sigh of relief. You can now relax and document all the information that you are going to be getting, so you can go out there and do that which you've been sitting on for a long time. So get your pen and paper ready. So where do we begin, Dr. Jackson? Where do we begin?
Well, the very, the most important that you have to understand that the 501c3 status is a federal designation. That application, the application number is a 1023. That application goes to the IRS. It goes to the Internal Revenue Service. And the laws around the 501c3 are Internal Revenue Code laws. So we have to understand that off the top, that it is a federal designation, and you are doing that application to the federal government. But prior to doing that, there are some things you must do at the state level. You must file with your state, no matter what state you live in, articles of incorporation. And your articles of incorporation basically just says this is going to be our name, this is our address, this is our purpose, these are our board members, our people who are helping us with incorporating the business. And those incorporation papers must say that it's for a nonprofit. That must be done prior to going after the application at the federal government, because that documentation is going to be needed to, as an attachment to that application. So articles of incorporation are absolutely necessary. Number two, for any business, whether you're for-profit or nonprofit, you must have a tax ID number, an EIN, and that's a employer identification number, because as a business, you are able to employ. So that is almost like the business's Social Security number, and it's separate from your personal Social Security number. And the way that they even document it is a little different than how we document our Social Security number. So EIN number is absolutely necessary as a part of the process of getting your nonprofit started. Another area that you have to have are bylaws. And bylaws are critical because it tells the laws of how you're going to function as a board and the nonprofit. Let me say this, because people don't sometimes understand this, is that your board of directors really serves as the legal representation of that organization. So if there's any problems, if there's any issues, those things go through the board of directors. And you have to have a minimum of three, and you can have a maximum of any number, but it has to be an odd number. Your board has to be an odd number, because if there's any voting, you won't have a tie. That's critical, that you have an odd number. I've known people that say, well, I want four people. No, you can either have three or five. Four won't
five, work. Yeah. That's right. Now, insights you would give us about selecting board members?
Oh, that's a great, great question. Selecting board members is very critical, because the first thing you want to do is you want to select people that, one, you trust, two, have the vision and the heart for the population in the area that you're planning to work with, and then number three, that they're not all family members, because you want people to bring, let me say it again, not all family members. You don't want your family just as your board, because there's going to be limitations working just with your family. You want to have much vision, much different points of views as you can that's going to be around that particular area. Because I think what happens is people choose their family members because those are people that they know and people that they trust. However, if you're going to be, say, starting an empowerment center, but no one in your family knows anything about empowerment, really, how are they going to help you? So you want someone on that board who understands that particular population or a particular topic that you're going to work with. I always say two areas where you absolutely want some specialists is in the area of finances. So you might want a CPA or an accountant or someone who understands money, because you're going to be doing budgets. And you want someone, if you don't know how to do a budget, you definitely want someone on your board who can be the lead go-to person for the budget and the money question. The second person. The second person is an attorney. An attorney helps you because there are always going to be legal ramifications, documents to sign, things of that nature, and it's always beneficial to have a person who understands how to read contracts, how to respond to contracts, things of that nature. So those are two people that I always recommend. If you can't have them on your board necessarily, because people are busy these days, then you want to possibly get an advisory board who's just there to advise you in particular areas and around particular topics.
You know, I was listening to you, and I remember leading up to starting my nonprofit, I was speaking with an individual, and the individual said, this is something to always remember. When you have board members, they are either cutting the check or they are writing check, or they go out and get somebody who can write the check. He never gets someone who is just sitting there. And some family members are just going to be sitting there to say that they are there. But, you know, we can always use those people in other aspects, in events or different committees. If you have family members that like to fry chicken, well, they can fundraise selling fried chicken annually. And that's their product, and they are still contributing. They do not necessarily need to be on the board. I don't know. I hear a lot of disturbance. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. That was my little microphone.
Okay. All right. I want to welcome guest 981 to the show. Remember, guys, you can call in with your question. We are now talking about nonprofits and all the ins and outs of setting up a lucrative nonprofit, because being a nonprofit doesn't mean you don't have no profit. You just have to make sure profits are channeled into the right areas. So, let's continue now. You spoke about what needs to be done at the state level. You spoke about how many members we need to have on our boards. And you spoke about the importance of having an odd number. And let it, you are the one with the dreams of what you want to do. And nonprofit?
Oh, yeah. You definitely can create a legacy for your vision, for your passion, for service. And so I want to continually use the word service, because when you are doing a nonprofit, you are providing a service. You are walking out, helping and assisting where there's a need, where there's gaps in services, where there's problems that you want to eradicate in your community or in the world. So, yes, you can definitely create a legacy. But now let me say this, because this is sometimes hard for the person who has the vision. Because if you have the vision and you want to be implementing the work, doing the work, being the executive director of the organization, and you're going to be paid a salary or paid out of the monies brought in, then you will not have a vote on the board. And let me tell you why. Because it is a conflict of interest for you to vote on things, then turn around and benefit from the thing. So you have to keep those things separate. You have to make sure that you decide off the top which role you want to occupy and why, because executive directors serve at the pleasure of the board of directors. So even if you selected the board of directors every year should do an appraisal or advisory type of assessment of the executive director and keep that in their file. All of those things are necessary when you're building the legacy. You want to make sure that you're doing it right, that you're doing it in order, and that you're not just flying by night. I think it's so important that you get some consultant or you get someone who works with you who has a track record, who can demonstrate that they have done it before. They have testimonials that you can talk to clients who work with them. You don't want to just go blindly by what someone says, because people can lead you astray. And you definitely want to spend your resources with someone who's able to walk you through the process, teach you as you're going, and then make sure that it's done properly.
I think I part of the question, because the question was two parts. The other question I asked, which I think touched on slightly, was the fact that if you are the founder of the nonprofit, if there were any benefit other than creating your legacy and giving service that you can. And you touched on it briefly about being the executive director. And so, based on your years of experience and involvement, I know you can't tell us what to do, but is it better to be a voting factor or to be an executive director?
Well, let me say this. It really depends on what you plan to do, what your desire is. If you are doing nonprofit and you need or plan to get paid and have a salary from the work that you're doing, then you absolutely need to be the executive director. But if you're someone who does not plan to get paid, that you're not doing it to create a salary for yourself, you're just going to be the founder, you're going to be overseeing, you're not going to be doing the day-to-day work of the organization, then by all means, serve as the board chairperson of the board of directors. But that is an individual question that each founder has to ask for themselves. I've worked with people who've done the executive director role for a while and then transitioned onto the board, or vice versa. I've had board members who have transitioned to be the executive director.
So you really
have to ask that question for yourself.
That's right, and it depends on where you are in life and what you are looking for.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for answering that question. So I know there are many other components, and I want you to continue going, and I will interject with questions as they deemed appropriate.
Okay. Well, the next thing that we're going to talk about is funding. Absolutely. How do you get the money to do what you plan to do? Money, honey. And so it's important
that
you do Show me the money. It's important that you do what I call a fund development plan. And a fund development plan is a comprehensive plan that looks at how you're going to bring money into this nonprofit. And there's many different ways to go after bringing in money. One of the most popular ways is going after grants, going after funding from a funder. Now, it's important to know that all grants are not created the same. All RFPs, which means request for proposal, are not the same. So you can't look at one proposal and figure that you know everything about proposals because you've looked at this one. All proposals are different. They have some similarities, but they really are written specifically for a purpose, and those purposes may be different. And then the people who do them are different. So you have to make sure that whenever you're approaching grant writing or proposal writing, that when you get that request for proposal, you do two things. The first is just you sit and you read it from the beginning to the end. The second thing is just read it again. But this time with a highlighter, highlighting the key information that you're going to need to make sure that you do or that you work with as you are completing that particular grant. So grant writing is a big deal. You need to understand the lingo. You need to understand the funder who's asking for the RFP because every funder is a little different. You have governmental entities that put out grants. You have businesses that put out grants. You have foundations that put out grants. So each of those look at how they want your information a little differently. So that is just a whole talk show by itself about what's going on in the grant process. But I did want you to know that that is a great possibility for a nonprofit because many of the funders require, in order to go after their funding, that you have an active 501c3. So that is one of the benefits of having a 501c3 because a grant you get, you do what you're supposed to do. You cross all your I's and dot all your T's, and you don't have to pay that back. Unlike a for-profit business to get started or to do a program, you have to go and get a loan or a small business loan or a microloan. And the mere word that is a loan means that you will be paying that back out of your profit. Yeah, so understanding the fund development plan, that is one of the things that I do for my clients when I'm working with them, is we do a detailed plan that looks at different ways to go after bringing money in. And money can come in, and there are two categories that they fall into. They fall in dedicated money, which is when you write a grant, they say that you have to spend the money doing this, this, and this. And so you have to make sure that you keep copious records saying that you did this, this, and this. But then there's also opportunities to raise money that are unrestricted money, which means that you can spend it in the organization any way that you see fit. You can spend it on administration. You can spend it on getting a secretary. You can spend it on doing training for your staff, whatever. But that is unrestricted money. And out of all the money, some of my favorite money is unrestricted money.
For you particularly, and perhaps some guidance also from Dr. Daphne. At some point in my life, I planned to do a lunch program at my church in Jamaica. Now,
okay.
In order to do this, I understand that I don't have any money now, but I also question whether I have to or if there could be a nonprofit being formed to funnel money to this effort in Jamaica. And yeah. I'd like to hear your answer on that.
Oh, absolutely there would be a way to form a nonprofit to service the people in the less program that you want to do in Jamaica. Now, let me say this. When you do the 501c3 application, there is a question on that application that asks, will you be doing services in a foreign land?
Okay.
And if you say yes, then you have to describe what you're going to be doing in that foreign land. And since we have Homeland Security now, whenever you go through the application process and you're going to be doing things outside of the country, they're going to ask some questions as well. So, yes, you can definitely do that, but just know that there is an additional layer of questions that you have to respond to when you're going to be serving people outside of the country.
Okay.
And so it is definitely a possibility. Also possibly having some connections with the United Nations, because the United Nations has funding and things of that nature that you can go on and you can be certified as an NGO, which is an organization that is doing services across the world and not just in the United States. So, yes, that is definitely something that you can do and get funded for, because they're funding opportunities even in our own government to assist other governments.
Okay.
For other areas.
Mm-hmm. All right, fabulous. Okay. I'd like to.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to follow up by asking if at some point I could get some relative information from you. I have an interest for quite some time. I have done some exploration, and it seemed to me that folks were not interested when it came to outside entities like what I had in mind. And perhaps I may have asked the wrong person or the wrong questions, but I'd like to follow up with you directly or indirectly. It doesn't matter, as long as I can get the information. And seriously, I'd like to talk to you some more about how to
let me
do
this
kind of stuff.
Let me give you my telephone number. You have a writing utensil?
I always do.
Absolutely. So my telephone number is 800.
Okay.
456-5495.
Okay.
That's my 800 number. Then let me give you my email address, because I answer emails as well. Sabrina, S-A-B-R-I-N-A.
Okay.
At SabrinaJackson.com.
I just want to, add one thing to Mr. Alexander, that all funds that is collected by him will have to go into my breakfast feeding program in Jamaica, seeing that I started before his lunch program.
Hey, Dr. Daphne, you're special to me, so we can work something out, okay? Yeah, you're very special to me, so we can always work something out.
Oh, that is so fun. Anyway, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to call in this morning. And if anybody else, just go put it on Facebook out there for us and send them, because we need to hear from them. This is the year, a year of great change, when all of us will want to be doing something different. And nonprofit is part of the way to go. Thank you very much, Ms. Alexander. And as you listen in, I know you're going to have more questions. You're welcome to call back in. Thank you.
Thank you very kindly. And I appreciate you bringing this kind of program into all of us. It's inspirational. And I thank you very much, Dr. Jackson.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Wonderful. You know, you never know who you are touching. Mr. Alexander is out in Tennessee. That's where he resides. He is from Jamaica originally. And I met him a couple of months ago. He was listening into one of the shows. So it's, you know, it's even one person that gets benefit from what we're doing. Our job is done, Dr. Jackson. You know?
Absolutely.
We never know. So,
Let me dive into that question that you asked before Mr. Alexander called in with his deep, wonderful voice. I just wanted to throw that out to him. It was just pleasant listening to him ask the question. Oh, my goodness.
I am telling you, Lord. Look, what am I going to be doing with my experts that I get on this show? Listen, I know that's no reflection of me. I'm just telling them I don't want to be in trouble. Anyway, what would that day?
Let me say this about hiring a grant writer. There's some very key information that you need to ask. One, you need to ask them what type of grants have they written before and what type of grants have funded that they've written and what type of training do they have, because they should be able to speak the language of the grant world. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that you do not want a grant writer that's going to tell you that they're going to guarantee you the money or that they can wait to be paid until you get the grant. And let me tell you why you don't want that, because that right there sounds scammish to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, one, when you know the process of how grants are awarded, you understand that you can't influence that process. And let me give you an example. I have been a reviewer for the federal government. So we flew to the federal area, we reviewed the grants, we came together, and so off the top, we knew that that particular office was going to award 50 grants. Out of 200 grants that we were reviewing, 100 grants got very high scores.
Mm-hmm.
So we still had to come up with a way to only fund the 50. And by that mm-hmm. time, if every one of the 100 was written well, met the criteria, we still couldn't fund all 100. So we had to mm-hmm. come up with a way to fund the 50. Now, mm-hmm. if I had told someone, I can guarantee you that you're going to be one of the 50, then I'm doing something illegal, because mm-hmm. there is no way that I can guarantee you, even if everything was right that was done, mm-hmm. that you're still going to get the money. There are too many
variables that go into when
you actually get the money. That's the first thing mm-hmm. that's important to know. The second mm-hmm. thing that's important to know is that people can't pay you for grant writing out of monies that's earmarked for something else. So
if
you wrote a grant to do economic development in your community and build some houses, well, building houses and grant writing is two different activities. So you can't mm-hmm. take the money from building houses to pay the grant writer when it's not in the budget for what it's doing. And you need to know that you pay, you get paid and you spend the money based on the date that you receive the grant. So if I wrote the grant in January of 2013, but you didn't get awarded the grant until September of 2013, how are you paying me in September for work I did in January?
And a lot of people get into dangerous territory because they don't know all of what you're saying here now. You know,
yeah.
And I'm excited about this conversation today because people need to be prepared and to be forearmed so you don't go down the wrong path. That's what a lot of nonprofits get up, and next thing you don't see them anymore because they did everything that was not the correct thing to do because they didn't know better. So thank you so much, Tom. So let's continue on grant writers and how to choose them and some questions to ask.
Yeah, you absolutely need to make sure that your grant writer, let me say this too. I have to say this because oftentimes when people say that they want a grant writer, they really don't know what they're asking for because they really want more than a grant writer. They want someone that's going to find them the money. They want someone that's going to do the research for the data that's necessary to put in the grant. They want someone to help them design the program to respond to the grant, and they want the person to write the grant. All those skill sets are different and require a different amount of time, a different amount of skill set. And so you need to understand the whole totality of what you're asking for when you want a grant writer. You want more than just a grant writer. Because when you say you want a grant writer, you just want me to come and write the grant, that means that you have already obtained the RFP. You already know that you are eligible to apply for it, so you have all the eligibility requirements up front. I don't have to help you get them. You understand how your program is going to work. You just want me to write it. That's a grant writer.
That's
but
right.
Most people want more than that. And
is
so
it then,
I'm not.
Do
I'm
we
sorry,
need
what's
do? So what's the category? Because a lot of buzzwords out there. So what we're looking for then, are we looking for a grant consultant?
Exactly. You want someone who's going to consult with you, who's going to tell you up front what they're able to do, how much time it's going to take them. And this is what I do when people hire me. I have a retainer fee. If you want to hire me as a consultant to help you in the grant area, you pay me a retainer fee. And then out of that, I tell you what my hourly rate is, and I don't charge you any more money until I have expended those hours that you've already paid for. Secondly, we agree that we're going to move forward with additional hours. So I don't bill people willy-nilly like some people do. I get a retainer fee for me to start work on your behalf. I do research. I get RFPs that I know that you're available for. I train you. I teach you in some things. And then after we've expended those dollars, then we'll come together again and say, do we want to move forward in this way? Do we want to stop here? So that you're aware every step of the way what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and the cost for my time.
And it's the same process that attorneys work by, you know, when you talk to them about representing any matter, they tell you how much the retainer is and they draw from that retainer to pay their paralegal and the other work they want themselves. So it's not that it's a new system. That's systems that other professionals use. But what we need to do, enter into this. Yes, it's good to talk about nonprofit and having it. But the only way we are going to continue to do what we're doing is once we start off on the right footing. We have 46 minutes remaining. I want you to call in. My honored guest is Dr. Sabrina Jackson, and she's teaching us everything that we need to know in considering to develop a nonprofit. She's not any ordinary consultant, ladies and gentlemen. She has worked with federal and she has worked with states. If you want to hear from somebody who knows what they're doing, you need to be on this call. So I thank the people who are in the chat room. Feel welcome to call in 646-915-8166. I also want to remind you that I do have a few openings remaining for the webinar series. A new you without plastic surgery and dieting. And this next one is going to be on the 15th, this Friday. And then the following Friday, we will conclude on the first series, and then we are going to start it over again. And I am looking for a few great volunteers. I need volunteers to help me here on the show. We are also looking for some sales people who will be selling advertisement for the radio show. I think with 85,000 listeners, we have earned the right to sell some advertising slots for the show, because your messages will be reaching people. And I too am looking to add six new clients to my list before the 15th of March. So call me at 203-794-6802 or email me at dynamicdaphne1@gmail.com. While you are out there checking me out, I want for you to check my website, Daphne Clark Hudson Empowers.com. There's some freebies there for you. There is ebook and there are DVDs and CDs that you can get some. Call me, check me out if you know anybody who can use my services. And if you want any more information about any of the things I'm doing, don't hesitate. Call me. Follow me on Twitter at Dynamic Daphne. On Facebook.com, like my fan page at Facebook.com/Dynamic Daphne. Join me on Twitter again. And on LinkedIn, I'm so proud to say that my profile was among 5% of the 200 million profiles that have been read in 2012, and I'm praying that they will convert them into meaningful business across the globe. Because what they say, have business will travel. So I'm looking that this is the year when I'm going to be in your neck of the woods, wherever that may be. I want to welcome guest 1152 to the show, and you're just in time for my honored guest, Dr. Sabrina Jackson. Dr. Jackson, continue, please.
Well, I just want the other thing that I absolutely want people to understand is that when you first file your articles of incorporation with the state, you have 27 months between the day that you file your articles and when you should get your application into the IRS. Because they're expecting you to start doing some things, because there's some questions in the application that if you haven't done anything, you can't answer. So they're expecting you to have done something, to start something, to have some meetings, to do a fundraiser, to have something to talk about so they know you're serious about the nonprofit. So you have 27 months before that application needs to go into the IRS. The other thing that you need to know is that the IRS is very slow in processing the application. And so right now, you can go on the IRS website, irs.gov, go to their charity and nonprofit section, and in that section it'll tell you what month they're processing. And the last time I checked, which was last month, they were working on applications they received in March of 2012. So that's how far behind they are. They're behind. They're behind. But there's two things that you need to understand, is that when they do approve you, they approve you retroactively to the date that they received the application.
Right. So you're not really losing. Beautiful.
Let me say this, that the government does have a process for expediting the application. And so there's a possibility if you meet those criteria, there's three, and if you meet those criteria and you do a letter of expediting, you can move to the front of the line. And so
wonderful.
I do have all of that information. That's something that I consult in, and I've assisted people with getting to the front of the line, as they say.
Wonderful, wonderful. I tell you, my my our listeners, they just capitalized this morning, because whether they are speakers or coaches or they're looking to do a nonprofit, they got the best of the best. I know this little kid used to say bestest of the best. So they got good thing this morning, because if they are looking to put grants in and form non-profit, they don't need to go any further than consulting new. And if they're looking for marketing and speaking platform, they just hop at Brenda. I tell you guys, it doesn't get better in any other airways than does on this one. So I tell you, I am just so excited about the conversation this morning. I want the people in the chat room to know that you can call in and write your question. I will read it. But those of you who are sitting, I know some of you are at work and you cannot call in, but you are listening. The number to call is 646-915-8166. 646-915-8166. And my honored guest is Dr. Serena Jackson, giving us all the insights on how to do the right thing when we are forming a nonprofit and all the ins and outs. She has laid it out so we can create a checklist. And when we pick up the phone to make that call, we know we have all pieces of the puzzle together. So again, thank you, thank you, thank you. I want to ask a question.
Okay.
I know you are very rounded when you have so many skills and so many expertise. My goodness, I am so honored to know you and to have you in my Rolodex. I'm very excited about that. Of all the things you do, why and when and how did you become so passionate about nonprofit?
Well, I think it came from the fact that I worked in nonprofits all my career. I've done something with nonprofits. When I got my master's degree, I started working at a children's agency where I worked with special needs children. And so I saw that there's always a need. There's always a gap in service. There's always something that people who are less fortunate can benefit from, and I am a believer, and I am a Christian, and then the word says that the poor shall always be with you, and so I believe that as a Christian, we need to do what's necessary in the laws of this land to take care of those who have difficulty taking care of themselves. So I have been an executive director. I have worked at the county level in Michigan, working at our mental health board, and so that gave me a passion for making sure that there are resources and people who have a passion to help those who cannot help themselves, because there's always a need. I mean, the list goes on and on and on about the things that people need, that the people that are struggling. I've worked in a domestic violence shelter. I've worked with the mentally ill. I've worked with children who've been abused and sexually abused. And so seeing all of that suffering and pain and hurt, we need the resources to come to the people who absolutely need them. And so if I can be a beacon of light on that particular journey, I am glad that God uses me as a vessel in that way.
Dr. Jackson, as you look on the communities across America, I know you live in Detroit and all that, but you're a student, you're a scholar, and you're continuously reading. What are some of the things that you think that communities can do better better around the areas of nonprofits?
Well, I think one of the things that and most funders are requesting and demanding this is that we have to do a better job at working together. That
collaboration.
We have to do collaboration. We have to partner. We have to stop reinventing the wheel. So if there's something that needs to be done, that there are people that are already doing some piece that you can partner up and get a greater return on those dollars that come into your community. You don't want to fight against your neighbor. You want to work with your neighbor.
That's
because
right.
The Word
That's
tells
right.
us that we're supposed to love our neighbor like we love
That's
ourselves.
Right.
So we have to look at it differently. We have to approach going after money differently, because any multi-million dollar grant that's out there right now is requiring partnership, and they are also requiring it in a robust manner. That is some terminology that I'm seeing in RFPs now, a robust collaboration. Robust means that you have several things that you're doing together. You have evidence that you've been working together for a while, and that you did not just decide to work together just to come after this grant.
Got money.
So
that's right.
Working together is an absolutely necessary thing. And so, you know, the whole thing about communication and working together and team building, all those skill sets are necessary in the nonprofit world.
I think that, and based on someone who has worked in nonprofits for a period of time myself, I think that when you use the word collaboration to a lot of agencies and organizations, it's a kind of a taboo, because they see collaboration as competition versus a value-added proposition. And I think that communities, the different communities across America, needs to begin to empower themselves as nonprofit to know that collaboration is the way to go. That's the only way we can impact the masses. And, you know, remove the egos. I think that when we look at RFPs, stuff like that, you've got to check your egos in at the door coming from the community tables. You can't come there with pride and ulterior motives and ego, because that's why a lot of communities are suffering, because there's no money coming in there, because I'm looking for me, you looking for you, John looking for themselves, and so on. So by the time we begin fight, the money is already awarded.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. We had a situation here in Detroit that we spent over $500 million back to the federal government because they could not get the working together thing down.
Woo!
Isn't that absolutely? And I really believe the number was more like $800 million, but it was way too much money. And all the people who could have benefited from, I think it was some type of housing renovation type money, things of that nature. But we sent that money back, and so
just
we have
people
to ask.
Yes.
And a lot of times when you do get the money, people are so concerned with how it's benefiting me. Because at the end of the day, when you talk about a nonprofit, the nonprofit is designed to provide a service. So it's almost like we should have the attitude like Malcolm X says, by any means necessary, if I have to work with you to get this to my client, that's what I'm going to do. Because at the end
that's
of the
right.
day, I want to make sure that my client is served. I have a friend
that's
right now, a client, a colleague that I'm working with, that she was stabbed 23 times by her boyfriend.
My God.
And she is fine. I mean, she's really doing fine. But she has to go. In fact, she has to go tomorrow, I think tomorrow or Friday, for the sentencing of him. And so they've been asking her to have words at the sentencing. And so she's been kind of working on what she's going to say and how she's going to say it. But it is so critical that we support each other, that we work together. So now she's a voice for domestic violence. Her story is remarkable. So I always say the very thing that was the most difficult thing for any of us to go through, that is the area that we then become an expert in. Because once we get through and we're on the other side, we can pull somebody up.
That's right. That's right. That's it right there. That's it right
there. I know you didn't want me to preach, but you know I'm a preacher.
Oh, no, but listen to me. Whatever is coming out is what people need to know. because we need to go into these projects with clear heads. Because if we go in there messed up thinking and messed up hearts, we are not going to be able to impact and empower and transform anybody's life, because people are going there and putting the pens on paper with selfish, selfish, selfish thoughts. And you can't do that. No ulterior motive in there. If you're going to do it for the community, it's the community. It's like people said to me, but why didn't you do something in America with breakfast feeding program? I said, I was sent back to my school to do this. And I said, the money might still be coming, but I know every $2 or $5 that the people give to the Carmel Moravian School Breakfast Program, they are doing it because they believe in what I'm called to do. So, you know, I am just so honored. I'm so honored, Dr. Jackson, to have you on here. So listen, guys, we are down to only 29 minutes. My Lord, where does time go when you are getting informed? I'm telling you, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. So come on, this is your time, 29 minutes, to light up the board. Light up the board. 646-915-8166. Okay, Dr. Jackson, so you continue. You know I'm going to interject when I have a question. So
I think one of the other things that's important that I do when I'm working with starting a nonprofit is I spend time with the board members, and I tell them, the 10 major responsibilities of a board member. Because it's important that all people that are serving on the board have a clear understanding of what their responsibility is. One, they don't get paid for their time. Their participation is volunteer. That's what keeps the organization at a nonprofit status. And so we have to understand that there are rules that the IRS has set up for nonprofits, and we need to follow those rules. So I make sure that the board members are clear on their role and their responsibility. I also make sure that the executive director and the board understands what things that they're going to have to send in to the IRS on an annual basis so that they maintain their status. So what has mm-hmm. happened is in 2010, the federal government passed a law that says if you do not file your 990, which is like your tax form for the nonprofit, then they will revoke your 501c3 status. And so mm-hmm. if they revoke you, you have to apply all over again.
All over again.
You cannot just
go back in that slow, expensive process.
Yes. It is $850
mm-hmm.
to the federal government. And so if you've paid that and you've gotten your status, you definitely want to do everything you can to keep that status.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I tell you, this is getting better and better. But, guys, don't be emailing after Dr. Jackson going to ask me the questions, because I don't know the answers, but she does. So take your opportunity to call in if you're in the chat room. Please, please, please type your question and I'll read it for her. For those of you on the line, if you're at work and there's a burning question, call it better. Just whisper on the phone and I will make my best to hear you so I can repeat the question. So call in 646-915-8166. Yes. So we talk about not doing anything to get your thing revoked. All right. So where else do you want to go? I know you have so much more information, but we only have 25 more minutes.
Well, I think the next thing that I really want to talk about is the fact that the board of directors itself should get board of directors insurance because the board of directors, as I said before, serves as the legal representation for that entity. And because they do, then it's important that you cover yourself in case of any liability or anything like that. And that insurance is pretty reasonable for a year. And many, many, many organizations have it. And so that is something sometimes that the funder may even ask for. The other thing that
don't move on insurance yet. Is there a line item in the grant that covers that cost or no, or prohibited?
Generally, it does not, because that would be considered an administrative cost. And so administrative costs generally come out of unrestricted funds. And so that's where in your fund development plan, you have to plan on looking at obtaining unrestricted money so you can pay those administrative costs. So,
wonderful.
Yeah, you want to be able to do that.
Please move to your next insight.
And so the other thing is that I also work with boards on doing what I call a board assessment. And so the board itself should assess annually how they are working together, how they're meeting their needs, how they're doing their programming, and keep that information in a file, and that becomes a legal document for the organization, because that is another area that some funders are asking about. They're asking, do you have an assessment of how the board is functioning? So I have several different models of the way that that assessment can be done and the forms to be used and things of that nature. And then one additional thing that the board has to remind themselves of and do on an ongoing basis is that your minutes from your board meeting are legal documents. So those minutes have to be documented clearly. I always tell them that whenever there's a vote, that whoever made the motion should be listed, whoever seconded, and then whatever the response is, and all of that should be bolded so that when someone is reading through your minutes, they could immediately identify those decision-making areas.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I know you work with clients all across America, and I know because I have been in a position where I'm the one facilitating the board of directors retreat. But you talk about working on the board assessment. Is that something I can do in person? For example, if the organization sets up a board retreat and something, is that something you do?
Absolutely. I absolutely will come there and do a board retreat. And we'll do a lot of things. It'll be a lot of work, but we can also infuse fun. I love face-to-face because I am a speaker, I am a trainer. So I love giving that information and answering those questions that come right off the cuff as you're going through the process of learning how to work together on the board, how to make sure that you have all the governance pieces in place to make sure that you have your financial things in place, that your budgets are set up right, that you have an accountant that's going to do a separate audit. And you should do a financial audit because that lets the funder know that you know how to handle money and that when you have an outside auditor who has no exceptions in how you're doing your practices, that goes a long way with the funder. The other thing that the funder may ask is, has the board members financially contributed to the organization? So in my fund development plan, I talk about that. I talk about how much money the board members themselves pledge to give to the organization, because a funder will think this: why should I fund an organization that you don't give any money to?
You don't support. You know, last year I was privy to be introduced with someone who took over 11 years ago. He took over an organization with a $104,000 budget, right?
Okay.
And in 11 years, he has raised that budget to $2.6 million with no federal funding or any state funding, all private donation.
Oh, lovely. That's lovely. And see, that's why you have to understand that there are so many different ways to get resources. And I use the word resources and not just money, because a lot of times what you need, you need to ask for the need. So I'll give you an example. I was working with a church, and I do a lot of work with churches and getting their nonprofit status separate from the church, and I'm going to address that in a minute. But one of the examples that I have is I have a girlfriend who had a church, and they needed a lot of renovation. So the first thing I told her, I said, we need to make a wish list. And the wish lists are just things that we need. So one of the things that she needed were pillars to hold up the foundation in the basement of the church. They needed new pillars. So we sent letters to construction companies, and a construction company called back, and not only did they donate the pillars, they brought the people to put the pillars up, and that was all in kind, because they
were able
to get a write-off for the time, the labor, and things of that nature. And so when we're going after resources, the number one place to look for someone to go after is the Yellow Pages. Because the Yellow Pages, if you need carpet, go to the carpet area and send a letter to all the carpet people. If you need computers, go to the computer area and send all the letters to the people. But there's so much to be said by just asking for stuff and not always asking for money.
Wonderful. We have 18 minutes remaining. So I want you to decide how to split this up. You will need to split it up between summarizing a few key points you want to leave it us with and giving out your contact information, how people can reach you again. I know you had gave it to Mr. Forrester. So I want for you to do that. No, we are down 17 minutes.
Okay. Well, let me give my contact information for anyone that is interested possibly in asking me additional questions or possibly retaining my services to meet your nonprofit and grant writing needs. Again, my name is Dr. Sabrina Jackson. My website is sabrinajackson.com, myname.com, or my email address, which I do respond to every email I receive, Sabrina, S-A-B-R-I-N-A, at SabrinaJackson, all one word, .com. And so you can contact me via the net. You can follow me on Twitter at Sabrina, S-J-E. That's my Twitter handle. And then I do have a fan page on Facebook, which is Essentially Sabrina. That's the name of my radio show. And so you can contact me that way. And then I do have an 800 number, and that 800 number is 800-456-5495. Again, that number is 800-456-5495. And I just want to add, Dr. Daphne, I just want to add that I am so blessed and so fortunate to have a sister named Dr. Daphne. When she says she's dynamic, oh, my goodness, the dynamic Dr. Daphne. I just want to know love this woman and the things that she's doing to empower people. And she's not just empowering people that, are just people who may be just in need. She empowers everybody. Anybody that she's coming in contact, she's going to inspire. She's going to uplift. She's going to propel them to another area in their life. So as the listening audience, I want you to know that I know that this woman's skill sets, her talents are for the world, and we are just blessed to have her in our midst.
Oh, thank you. Now you only have 15 minutes, Steve, to do your summary. But thank you so much for those kind, nice words. And, you know, I am equally as blessed to have somebody with your expertise and skill, as I say, in my Rolodex. And I know that this is a great year for change. And I tell you, we are going to have some testimonies next year. We go stories. Oh, there's one more thing I forgot. I have to take a minute. You keep your ears open because we are planning a cruise to Europe in 2014. So
hey.
I have the cruise consultant working on the details now. So stay tuned and stay close so that when we put the date out, you can jump on. So. Oh, 14 minutes, Dr. Sabrina. You can give me a minute and a half closing music, and you can take the rest, just summarize and leave us with the pointers to help us prioritize what we need to begin to do.
Well, let me say this. One of the things that I've developed is a process for going after your 501c3, and I have created what I call the three-phase process. And so under phase one, you get your articles of incorporation, you get your tax ID number, you get your bylaws, you get a mission statement, you get a vision statement, and you get a board development training. And that training can be done via a conference call. It could be done a video chat. So it does not have to be where I am in your area to get it done. And then phase two, we go a little deeper. In phase two, we make sure that you have a fund development plan. We make sure that you have any procedure, paperwork that you need as far as your application. So your conflict of interest statement is done under phase two. We also begin to look at your goals that you want to meet for the organization. So we begin the process of a strategic plan, the plan of action, how you're going to go after serving the population that you're talking about. And then under phase three, that's when everything comes together. And in phase three, that's when the actual application is done, the budget inside the application, as well as all the attachments that the application asks for. All of that is done under phase three. So it's important to know when you are going to seek a consultant to work with you on starting your nonprofit. Don't go to somebody just because they say that they're an attorney and that's what they do. You can ask anybody that you're dealing with for references, for people who you can talk to who's used their services. And was their services pleasurable? Was it reasonable? Was it, you know, I don't have a problem. I'm like an open book almost of sharing who my clients have been. You can contact them. I always let them know. I get permission from them at the onset of being able to refer them as a testimonial for the services that I provide. I think that's important. Because a lot of times you have these, what my dad would say is jackleg consultants that have taken tons of money from people and not delivered anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that is important that you're able to ask those questions and know the questions to ask is so important. One of the tips that I gave on the call today is about the 27 months. Look for that in the consultant. If they don't know that you can do that, they don't know what they're doing.
That's right.
If you don't know that and you say that you do this application, that's something off the rip you should know.
And you know something, when you go with them with a list of questions, when you're doing it over the phone, you have this powerful is to ask them, you know right away if they are above board and if they know what they do, because they're going to be suffering, and all the answers they give you and they get back to you, because they don't know. So that is a red flag. That is a definite red flag.
And let me say this. I have the IRS on speed dial because
Beautiful.
If there's ever a question that I don't know the answer to based on what I've been doing and my experiences, because there are new laws. There are new laws that come out every single year. One of the things that I do to keep myself abreast on this area is the IRS has a newsletter called the Exempt Organization. And so in that newsletter, they come out with any new procedures, new laws, new opportunities for getting your exempt status and keeping your exempt status. So I get those, and I read every word in those so that I stay up to speed on any changes, any additions to how going about getting your exempt status is being rolled out by the IRS. I have them on speed dial, and I ask the source. I don't call an attorney. I call the source.
That's right. That's right. And you know what I like about your system? People must understand. I'm not saying it because you are my colleague, but they're going to end up saving money when you work with one person that knows everything. Because the money in gas, in phone bill, in fees, you're going to the lawyer, you're going to the this, you're going to that. You need a consultant that has a one-stop shopping. It saves you money, it saves you time, and keeps your blood pressure normal. So, with that being said, Sabrina, why should we all, well, I guess it's too late for me because I already have done the business with you, but why should all the other people out there use you instead of any other consultant to do their business?
Well, the only thing that I will say about my business, because I don't want to berate anyone else, because I know there are some phenomenal consultants out there, and so you just really want to have the skill set of knowing that the person you're dealing with, one, is going to answer your questions. You don't want a consultant that's going to take your information, go into a black hole, and emerge with something and give it to you, because then you don't know what they're giving to you. You don't know if it's correct. I'm working with a client right now who paid an exorbitant amount of money to another consultant. She did not get any copies of her forms, so she didn't even know her own tax ID number. And then lady just stopped calling her back. She did not get her 501c3. She started getting all these letters from the federal government. So now I'm cleaning up that.
Wow.
So in order for you just not to have a mess, get someone that knows what they're doing. And
That's right.
Can say that I have never submitted an application for 501c3 that has not been approved.
That's wonderful, wonderful. So, guys, this is a segment that you will want to download on your smartphones and put on your tablet, put it everywhere so you can listen over and over and create your list that you're going to have all your questions to ask. We normally in life, we don't get the right answers because we don't ask the correct questions. So in order for you to have the right answer, you must have the right, right question. So don't be shy about creating your list and ask. Know that you're creating a relationship with these people. And it's for the long haul because this is a process. This is a process. And you can only understand it and get it to work for you if you're working with the right people, the right consultants who will hold your hand. I want to remind you that this Sunday coming up, last Sunday we had some issues with the show. And I wasn't able to air last Sunday, but this Sunday I'm having the gentleman come back again. So be sure to listen to us at 7 p.m. on Sunday night. We are going to talk about giving back your community and overcoming your personal challenges in life. It's two different segments. There's possibly going to be a third segment. I'm waiting to hear back from that person. So, again, I'm very excited. All right, Dr. Sibina, one more last time, give you an opportunity to give a closing thought for the day. We are down to 5 minutes and 30 seconds.
Well, I think my closing thoughts would be to let everyone know that it can seem like it's an overwhelming process, but there are people around, I happen to be one, that will walk you through hand in hand, arm in arm, lockstep, to get the status that you need to serve the population that you're concerned about. So get that vision clear in your head, give me a call, and we'll make that vision a reality.
Okay, Dr. Sibina Jackson from Detroit, Michigan. Thank you so much, my sister. I want to thank Brenda Tifa. I want to thank Mr. C. Alexander Forrest for calling in and for all the many guests on the phone, on the internet, and in the chat room. I want to thank my friend Pat for being on the line from overseas. She's in another country. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, Dr. Jackson, thank you, my sister. And you have a fabulously blessed day. And for all of you, my listeners, don't you forget that you are called for a destiny. And that destiny might be in the form of a nonprofit. Now you have no more excuses, because we equipped you and we have armed you to go out and make it happen. Love you guys, and I'll see you on Sunday. Stay blessed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Call it destiny. Will you let me know? What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
Purpose. govern that business and direct it, hallelujah, to my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with this lady. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with this lady. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. See the breaking of day. It's destiny. That I know what I know what I know what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. A strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called.